Hi, I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Marshall. Welcome to Tumble, the show where we explore stories of science discovery.
Today, we're meeting a defender of the planet Earth.
Ooh, like a superhero defender?
Yes. Someone has to protect the Earth from asteroids, and we'll find out how one scientist is on a mission to defend our planet from deep impacts, and the story behind how they gained their powers. Today's question comes from a listener who's curious about asteroids, space rocks that are found in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter.
Hey, my name is Jensen. I am 8 years old, and my question is, once an asteroid leaves the asteroid belt, how long does it take to travel to Earth's atmosphere, and how close does it have to be to Earth in order for scientists to see and measure it?
So Jensen's asking, like, how soon could we know about asteroids that might be on a collision course with Earth, and hopefully soon enough?
Well, Jensen has an idea of how scientists could find out.
Scientists could use their strongest telescope.
Yeah, I think you wouldn't want to, like, have your B team on this one.
Well, let's ask our listeners, how long do you think it takes an asteroid to travel from the asteroid belt to Earth? And how do you think scientists see and measure them? Take a moment to think about it, then we'll be back with an asteroid astronomer who will astound you.
Okay, so, like, if I think about this a lot, it has me a little worried. So what are the chances that an asteroid will hit Earth?
Yeah, let's get this out of the way. The chances are very small. But it's important to try and avoid the fate of the dinosaurs.
No kidding.
You know what happened to them, right?
Yeah, they became birds. Oh, and they got wiped out by an asteroid.
That's it. Fortunately, we have Edgar Rivera Valentin here to point out that there are a few important differences between us and the dinosaurs.
Unlike the dinosaurs, we have a space program. Unlike them, we can send stuff into space, and we can also construct these telescopes.
So how do we know that the dinosaurs didn't have a space program? Maybe they destroyed all the evidence right before the asteroid hit.
Well, the fact of the matter is that it couldn't have been good enough. Edgar, who uses they-he pronouns, works in a field of astronomy called planetary defense.
So in planetary defense, we say, let's learn from our past. Let's learn that this happens and make sure that we can predict when it might happen.
So learning from Earth's past history, because I know our planet's been hit with, like, a lot of asteroids, not just that big one that killed the dinos.
Yeah, exactly. And to do that, we have telescopes. Edgar happened to grow up next to the strongest telescope used for measuring near-Earth asteroids.
So I'm from Puerto Rico. I grew up at Arecibo. Arecibo actually hosted for a long time the world's largest radio telescope. And up until 2020, it hosted the world's most powerful radar system.
So that's Jensen's super strong telescope we were talking about. So what happened in 2020?
Well, we'll get to that later in the show. But for now, let's imagine little Edgar, who, like so many other superheroes, goes on a tour of a scientific facility that will change the course of their life.
I vividly remember when I was something like 6 or 7 years old, my family took me up to the telescope, to the visitor center.
Arecibo looks a little bit different from the telescopes you might be imagining.
Arecibo is a big dish in the ground, and above it, there's this platform that hangs above the dish.
So, like, it's a big dinner plate? Do they put big sandwiches on it?
No, it's not an actual plate, but it does kind of have the shape of a shallow bowl. It's built into a natural sinkhole in the ground, and standing on the edge of it is like being on the edge of a canyon.
So you're standing above the hole, looking down into this very deep chasm. Above the chasm, there's all these metal plates.
The metal plates are suspended above the chasm by a network of steel cables. It looks like a mirror that curves inward. And when Edgar looked up on their first trip, they could see a platform dangling above the dish.
And up there, there's these two big batteries. I like to imagine them as two Pikachus dancing.
Pika.
Two Pikachus like the Pokemon?
Yes, because Pikachus send out electricity.
Of course they do.
That's what these batteries did when they were excited, or as Edgar puts it, dancing.
And as they dance, they emit a lot of electricity and light. And that then goes out from the platform, hits the dish, and reflects back out into space.
Well, that's so cool. So where does all that Pikachu energy go? Into like a Charmander or something?
No. Arecibo was built to study all kinds of objects in near and distant space. But for planetary defenders, they aim Arecibo at an asteroid that might be dangerous for Earth.
We flash the light up to the asteroid. It then bounces back, hits the dish. And then as the light is about to come back to the platform, we tell the Pikachus, hey, take a breather, take some water. You're going to be cool.
It's good that they calm down the Pikachus. Hopefully they pat it on the head or something.
So they go and simmer down. They're resting. We're receiving all that light that came back. And then once we received all the light, we tell the Pikachus, okay, I'm going to put your favorite song on. Keep dancing. And we just keep repeating that until we get a really nice picture of what we're looking at.
Okay, so hey, Pikachus, calm down. This is can we shut down the dance part? There we go. Okay, we're trying to do a podcast in here.
Yeah, it feels kind of like an asteroid dance party. But in reality, the radar telescope is taking measurements of the asteroid, and those measurements are translated into a picture.
Okay, I get it.
But back to Edgar's first visit to Arecibo, they haven't yet learned about the Pikachus and reflection of light from space. Back then, just looking up at the structure was so impressive.
When you're standing by the telescope looking out, it is a very deep sense of awe. Awe in that, wow, like people built this, right?
In fact, Edgar's family was part of building Arecibo.
Oh, really?
Yeah. On their tour, the family passed by photographs of the telescope's construction back in the early 1960s.
And when we were walking by, there was this one picture with this truck at the bottom of where they were digging out the space for the telescope.
Edgar's grandfather called the tour guide's attention to the photo.
He's like, that's my truck. I drove that, bringing supplies from the port in San Juan up to Arecibo to help build this.
Wow, Edgar's grandfather's truck was in the photo? That's really crazy.
Yeah, Edgar was shook.
And so, like, that was one of those, what? Kind of moments as a kid, because, like, Arecibo, in Puerto Rico, you have to understand, it's a cultural heritage. And what I mean by that is, like, whenever in Puerto Rico you think of science, as a Puerto Rican, you think of the telescope.
Edgar felt so proud that their family was part of Arecibo's legacy from the very beginning, and they knew that they wanted to be part of its future. We'll find out how Edgar accepted their destiny as a planetary defender and what that meant right after this quick break. We're back. So when we left off, Edgar had started down the path of becoming a planetary defender. They went to school to study astronomy with the dream of becoming a scientist at Arecibo. And when they graduated, a job opened to work at the telescope.
Oh, so Edgar just applied and got it, right?
Not right away.
And so, like, when the position opened up, like, I almost didn't apply because I was like, am I worthy? Am I Thor? Can I pick up this hammer? I don't know if I can pick up this hammer.
I mean, to be fair, Thor's hammer is, like, really heavy. Not everybody can pick it up.
But Edgar decided to go for it, and they got the job. And they turned their attention to fighting their biggest nemesis, asteroids. That they're actually quite fond of.
I study a bunch of them, but one of my favorite ones I call batata. Batata is sweet potato in Spanish.
I have to say, it would be kind of embarrassing if all of human life was wiped out by a sweet potato.
It's not an actual sweet potato.
Oh, it's just an asteroid that's named sweet potato, which is almost worse. Like, couldn't it be Harbinger of Doom?
Well, it's got kind of a unique look.
This one specifically looks like a sweet potato floating in space, which I thought was just really cool.
I mean, again, amazing. Space is amazing, but it would be embarrassing.
Edgar wanted to find out how fast Batata was moving towards Earth.
So what we do is we end up, over a bunch of nights, measuring how far away it is and how that changes every night.
Then they can see where it's headed.
When we put those together, it gives us a good understanding of the orbit of the asteroid around the sun.
Okay, so it's like the orbital equivalent of finding out the villain Sweet Potato's secret lair.
If that lair was a moving target that moved in a very predictable way.
The best lairs.
But then the planetary defenders go a step further. They put all that information into a computer model, which predicts where Batata will be in comparison to Earth.
And we run those type of models out a bunch of years, and we constantly see just how close it gets to the Earth. And for this one, we're going to be fine. It doesn't get close at all.
Well, I guess we're saved that embarrassing sweet potato extinction.
What would all the other planets think?
I know. Mars is going to Venus. Like, did you hear what took out all the life on Earth?
It was a potato. So it only took a few nights to measure an asteroid and find out how fast it might reach Earth from the asteroid belts. But to turn it to a much more respectably named asteroid, another example is Apophis, which is named for an Egyptian deity who causes darkness and disorder.
So when it was first found, the information we got when we put it into the computer models showed that it had about a 3% chance of hitting the Earth on Friday, April 13th, 2029.
Oh, geez. That is really specific. Friday the 13th? I don't know. 3% is like too many percent.
There's too many like evil sounding number coincidences in there.
For a deity of darkness and disorder. So what are we going to do about that?
Well, so Edgar and his planetary defender friends targeted Apophis with their super telescope, Arecibo.
When we followed up with radar measurements, so flashing our lights onto it, we saw that, okay, you're going to get really close on that day, but you're not going to hit the Earth. So we're good.
Oh, saved again.
But Apophis will be something really cool to watch in the night sky.
And it's going to be close enough that at night, if you just take your binoculars out on Friday the 13th of April, 2029, you point your binoculars up and you'll be able to see the rock passing by safely, not going to hit us.
But NASA's not taking any chances about whether Apophis will come back for another play. They're going to find out all they can about it.
There's going to be a new spacecraft called APEX, Apophis Explorer, the acronym for it, that once Apophis flies close to us and keeps moving away, APEX is going to fly in and follow it and take those additional data sets.
Oh, wow. So an asteroid's going to like whiz by us, and instead of just cowering in fear, we're sending up a spaceship to learn about it.
Yeah, you don't let a villain get away with almost destroying Earth.
Right. You take data.
Yeah. And if anything does get close, there are plans for how to safely destroy an asteroid.
Like, do they blast it like in a video game? Like in Asteroid, the game?
So the thing with exploding asteroids is that we try to prevent having to do that at all costs. All of the math and computer models that we put together say that if you go out and explode it, you'll still have a rain of tiny rocks heading down towards you.
I'd really hate to have a rain of tiny rocks.
Yeah. So instead of blowing up the asteroid, they'll try to knock it off course.
The fancy word is called a kinetic impactor. That's a fancy word that just means we took a spacecraft and we just smacked into the asteroid. But that smack gives enough of a push.
So the spacecraft knocks the asteroid off the course to hit the Earth?
Yes. And fortunately, NASA hasn't had to do that yet.
But it's good to know that there's a plan that makes sense, and that we have super awesome telescopes that can help us find asteroids.
Yeah, but remember how I said at the beginning of the episode something big happened to Arecibo in 2020?
Yeah, so what happened?
In 2020, Arecibo broke. Puerto Rico's salty island air had eroded the equipment over decades. The cables holding the platform suddenly snapped apart, causing it to crash down into the dish. The damage could not be repaired, and Edgar was devastated.
The telescope is an instrument, is a tool, right? So from one sense, you want to tell yourself, it's just a tool. But people put feelings and emotion behind things, right? Like, so as a Puerto Rican who grew up next to the telescope, like hearing that, like I remember I was crying for a week. They released the video of what happened and I couldn't watch it for a month.
Oh gosh, you can really hear the emotion in Edgar's voice.
Yeah, talking about the loss of the telescope even now is hard for them.
I can understand. I mean, the superhero just lost their most trustworthy tool that was always by their side. And the relationship they had with the dancing Pikachus can't easily be replaced.
No. Well, there are other radar telescopes that are now being used to monitor asteroids, so we're still paying attention. But Edgar had to take a lot of time to process their emotions around losing Arecibo, and they decided to channel their energy in a way that could help others and keep our planet safe.
Because I felt this way when Arecibo collapsed, let me make sure that there's a new thing, a new tool that we can use. Let's make sure that we learn from what happened there so that this doesn't happen again.
Edgar is part of the effort to build a new radar telescope. And even though it might not be built in Puerto Rico, Edgar hopes that the next generation of planetary defenders will include new Puerto Rican scientists.
A highly skilled group of heroes from all over the world will protect Earth from sweet potatoes and other threats.
I'm excited for the next chapter.
Now that you've heard Edgar's story, can you think of an object or tool in your life that inspires you?
Draw a picture or write a story about this object. How did you first encounter it? What has it inspired you to do, and why?
Send us your drawings or writings to tumblepodcast@gmail.com. We would love to see them.
Thanks to Edgar Rivera Valentin, planetary radar scientist at Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Labs. This interview was recorded at the AAAS conference in February 2024. And super special thanks to Jensen for his question.
We have an amazing interview with Edgar that's available to Patreon members who pledge at the $1 level or higher at patreon.com/tumblepodcast. You'll learn so much more about Arecibo and their story.
We also have free resources on our website to learn more about asteroids, telescopes, and planetary defense. That's on the blog at sciencepodcastforkids.com.
Sarah Robertson-Lentz is our editor and designed the episode art. Elliot Hajjaj is our production assistant. Nuria Nett, the co-host of Tumble in Español, was our cultural consultant on this episode.
Gary Calhoun-James engineered and mixed this episode. I'm Lindsay Patterson, and I wrote this episode.
And I'm Marshall Escamilla, and I made all of the music and sound design for this episode. Tumble is a production of Tumble Media. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for more stories of science discovery. All right, everybody, here we are at the end of the episode, and we all know what that means. It's time for Patreon people. Here are some birthday shoutouts. Let's go to Layla Rose. Happy birthday on May 11th. Daddy and Jamila love you and hope you keep exploring. To Gemma, happy birthday on May 14th. Keep exploring. Mom and Dad and Kensei the cat love you very much. To Charlie, future fighter pilot, who's happiest when he's going Mach 2 with his hair on fire. Happy birthday on May 14th. And a happy May 14th birthday to Leland Oak. We love the way you soak up the world around you. With love from Mom, Dad, and Ivy. Happy birthday to Alexis on May 14th, too. Happy birthday to Emma Jane on May 14th. To Rosalie, your mama is so proud of you every day and loves you a lot.
Happy birthday on May 16th. To Joshua, stay comfortable being you and keep asking those incredible questions. And happy birthday on May 16th. To Xander, keep asking questions. Mama and Papa love you. Happy birthday on May 18th. To Chloe, happy birthday on May 20th. Daddy and Mommy love you. Paloma, happy birthday on May 20th as well. Mama loves you to infinity. To twins, Nika and Bernard, happy birthday on May 22nd. We hope you love exploring for many more years. To Sydney, Mom and Dad love you to another galaxy and back, which is like really far. Happy birthday on May 23rd. To Adrian, Mama and Papa love you to infinity and happy birthday on May 23rd. Thanks to all of you and to everyone who supports Tumble on Patreon. If you want to get a birthday shout of your own like these fine folks, simply support Tumble on Patreon at the $5 level or higher by going to patreon.com/tumblepodcast. Once again, that's patreon.com/tumblepodcast.